Muskegon's 100.9. This afternoon, I have the great pleasure of spending some time with an exceptional individual. Kit Cummings is here. He's an international speaker as well as teacher. He's an author, not to mention the founder of the Power of Peace Project. At this point in time, and I know it's almost like I've been studying and going over your books and exactly what you got going on, and I'm pretty much amazed. So start out a little bit about how this all got going in these few short years that it's turned into literally an international movement.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for inviting me. I've fallen in love with Muskegon. It kind of chose me, to tell you the truth. I didn't know Muskegon existed until about 4 years ago, and I was speaking at a conference in Grand Rapids. And one of the wardens here, who's become a great friend and a mentor of mine, Mary Burgess, she was speaking there and heard me speak, and then I heard her speak, and then we connected, and she was a warden at that time over two prisons here in Muskegon. There's three that are very close proximity. And they were having heavy gang violence in one of the more secure prisons, and the project and the program that I created and that I do all over the place is called the Power Peace Project, and it's a fascinating work, and I never could have planned it. It's not like you wake up one day and say, I think I'll create a job where I work with gangsters on a regular basis. But that's what happened. It was an idea that turned into an experiment, which morphed into a program, and now has evolved into a movement, and has taken me, you know, literally all over the place.
That's amazing. This started in like 2011. Is that when? At least getting its steam going?
Yeah. I was, there was a kid that I knew years ago that I was like a big brother to. Just loved the kid. He happened to be a Hispanic kid in about 12 or 13. And he got in trouble. And I caught him 10 years later and looking at a murder charge. And I'd lost him for 10 years. And so his mom asked me to go and see him. And this was in 2008, and that was the first time I'd gone in and started working with somebody inside a jail. But my heart just went out to him, and the fact that I knew him when he was a kid, it took away any kind of preconceived notion I had about prisoners or about bad guys or about, you know, gang members or whatever, because he was just Luis to me. And so I went in and started working with him, and that began this journey, which I had no idea where it would take me. So I was very open. In 2009, when I was invited into a prison ministry weekend event at a prison in Georgia. So I went because I was like, I was in, you know, because I'd seen the fascinating way that the system worked on the inside. That blew my mind. And I didn't know at the time it was Georgia's worst prison in the middle of a gang war. Very, very dangerous. I was just like, you know, didn't know what I didn't know, which turned out to be a good thing, you know?
Yeah.
But again, I don't know. People say, man, are you afraid when you're in there? I'm like, no, I'm fascinated. And all I find in there is, you know, grandfathers and fathers and sons and brothers and, you know, people in different points along a journey that's experienced a lot of pain. And so the official movement started in 2011 on Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday. Yeah.
And Martin Luther King is one of the focal points, a man of peace, of course, an incredible man of peace. But yeah. I noticed that in your book, there's times when sometimes all you need to do in a situation where you see some very angry people, you know, whose eyes are pretty much piercing through your body, and you just mention his name, and all of a sudden you can feel almost a sense of relaxation in the room.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, as I said, I was serving in this prison, and I was starting to get asked and invited to speak. I'd written a book, and it was about my life, and I was a preacher for many years, and that's where I developed my love for speaking. 25, you know, I was the least likely guy to become a preacher, you know, growing up. And then
most people are.
Right? And then it just grabbed me, and 15 years, 25 to 40, that's what I did, and I led large churches, and I did very well, but I burned out. At the age of 40, I was out of gas, and I was disillusioned. I was becoming bitter. I mean, it was it's a tough gig,
yeah.
You know, the pastor's life, and I just burnt out and fell pretty hard. So I wrote a book about that. And getting into prison ministry years later gave me my heart back, but in a whole new way. You know what I mean? Because I had a softer heart for people in trouble, and so I wrote a book called Unshackled, Diary of a Prodigal Son, and I talked about the drunken fallen preacher who found his way back through a bunch of convicts. And, you know, it was a story that kind of got me out there. And so I was getting to speak a lot, and I was in Philadelphia, and I was speaking to a large nonprofit conference, and I'm telling you, the idea just arrived. I had fallen in love with these guys, man, in these prisons. They had just captured my heart, and I wanted to help them. And Dr. King's picture came up on the screen, and the conference challenged all of us to go back to our cities, do something in honor of him for his birthday. And that was my idea, is, man, I'm going to try this peace movement at this prison. And so it was a peace pledge that 12 guys signed. I had no idea how it was going to change my life. And now there's literally thousands of inmates around the country and in some other countries that are now part of this thing, you know. So, but yeah, it was Dr. King that inspired me.
It seems like you initially started this out where peace, well, you went to places where it just didn't seem like it could be possible. Yeah. A lot of people might start out at the Rotary Club or something like that, but you decide you're going to go into prisons, or you've gone into countries where some of the most more violent countries where suicide rates are ridiculous. You take it to places. How does it work? One of the interesting things, I've had some limited experience in the prisons that we had talked about earlier, but as far as one thing I've noticed is there's just that separation. How do you get a level of agreement, and incredible in your book when you talk about going to a mosque and being part of a service, when you talk about going to a sweat lodge with the Native Americans, which I've actually done that. Maybe we can, that was very interesting. But all these different places that a lot of people would say, well, you know, if you don't keep it a Christian movement or you don't keep it a Muslim-based movement, but to be able to get all these different people, different ethnicities, you know, different cultures together. How do you do that? That's the tough thing. I know in my personal experience, that's been one of the toughest parts when it all of a sudden becomes fragmented and it seems almost impossible to get a dialogue between such different people.
Yeah. Great question. Well, I had spent, you know, that 15 years leading churches, I had pretty much gotten into a box. You know, but after all those years, I was living in a box, and I saw things the way I saw it, knew what I believed, knew what I taught. It was, you know, our way or no way. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Then my box exploded, man, and I decided, okay, that didn't work for me. So I went on this fascinating journey to be fascinated with, I mean, you'll hear me use that word a lot, is just not to lose my wonder and ability to be surprised. And so I told God, I said, I'll go wherever I'm invited. And that changed my life. Had no idea. That's how I went into ashrams and synagogues and mosques and sweat lodges and all over the world. Yeah. But, you know, the peacemaker thing is, I don't know. I mean, I started studying Dr. King when I was 25. I mean, he grabbed hold of me. I'm from Atlanta. And, you know, I mean, that's the heart of the civil rights movement. You know, but then I studied Gandhi's autobiography and Mandela's autobiography. And then I studied the biography of Malcolm X. And then I studied... So early on, I was being prepared for this and didn't know it. I was just fascinated with peacemakers, you know, the Dalai Lama. And you know, I started just studying everything I could. And I became a voracious, you know, learner, reader, studier, audiobooks. And then, you know, with YouTube, you can study anything, right? You know what I'm saying? So I just got hooked on learning things I didn't know. And then I took that same fascination into prisons. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to assume anything. I'm going to respect these men. I'm going to love them, and it ain't my job to judge them. I'm going to open up and get close to them. And I was in a prison this morning, and to answer your question, you know, the way that I do it, among other ways, is we start with what we have in common instead of what separates us. And so this morning, you know, I told them the history of it and what they were becoming a part of, but then we started talking about what are their dreams, what are their goals? They all want to get out. I said, why? You want to get out and do what? And I said, really, give me I want to be a husband. I said, to who? And he said, my wife. What's her name? Okay, what's a good husband look like? What do you want to do? Let's say you get out tomorrow. What are you going to do? And he started just defining what I'm going to protect her, and I'm going to love her, I'm going to provide for her. You know, I said, what's her name? He said her name. This is in front of a, you know, room full of convicts, sure. Right? And now everybody's listening to this guy talk about why he wanted to get out. And I said, now, everybody just listen to him. It's hard to hate him now, isn't it? Because he just talked about wanting to be a good husband. I said, when he gets out, if he does the thing that he just talked about, you think he's got a pretty good chance of staying out? And they all went, absolutely. I said, you see, he's got a good why. I said, give me another one. And brother said, you know, I want to be a good dad. I said, to who? He said, my children. I said, what are their names? He said, Matthew, Alexis, and Jasmine, I think, Savannah. Savannah, Alexis, and Matthew. I remember it. And I said, okay, well, what do you mean a good dad? What's that look like? And he went and he started saying, man, I want to teach them, you know, to do the right thing. And I want to teach them to forgive people. I want to help them. If they want to go to college, I want to get them there. Man, I want to provide for them. And I'm like, all right, guys, you know, 100 guys in the room, however many. I said, do this, if you will. Let's all pray for his kids. I said, repeat after me. Father. And they said, Father. I said, bless Matthew, Savannah, and Alexis. And all the men said it together. Well, the brother who, you know, that wanted to be a good dad, he teared up. And I said, now, when you woke up this morning, did you think that a room full of convicts were going to be praying for you little babies? And he said, wow. No. And he was crying. I said, now, when y'all see him on the yard, you're going to have a hard time hating him now, aren't you? Because you know he's got three kids. You know their names. You've prayed for him. Okay, so that's not a Christian, Muslim, Jew thing. That's a we're all in this together thing.
That's a humanity
right
thing.
So yeah. I do certain things like that, and then if it's Crips and Bloods and Gangster Disciples, Christian Muslims, black, white, old, young, we all have things in common. We bleed red, we have moms, we love our grandmothers, we have kids that we feel bad if we're not there for. I mean, so we start with those common elements, and then they do life together for 6 weeks. They meet together every week, you know, they sit down with their rivals, they break bread together, they go through exercises. At the end of 40 short days, they might not be holding hands and singing Kumbaya, but they're not fighting on the yard anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Nobody's getting shanked at that
point.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. When you're involved with people like this, it's almost a matter of trying to teach them. I don't know if you, I guess teaching, but mm-hmm. to, regardless of people's differences, to take a stand for the goodness in one another seems to be, is that the kind of the ultimate end to it?
Yeah, and I think the difference, there's nothing new under the sun, okay? Everything that I teach, I stole. Everything good I got, I stole. You know what I'm saying? It's out there. Anybody can grab it, you know? And so I've you know, pulled things from everywhere, and then I forget where I got them, and I guess they're mine now. So, you know, they're original if you forget where you got them from.
Now, do you come across situations with politics? Are you welcomed in most facilities? Was it hard to initially start this and actually get into various correctional facilities? I know sometimes you probably get pulled from both sides. You've got inmates that a guy's coming in and disrupting their gig, so to speak. You know, wait a minute. All of a sudden, my boy, all I had to do was snap my fingers, and he was going to go over and bust this guy up.
Now,
all of a sudden, he wants peace. And then and then even on the other side, where you've got administration, COs, and whoever that are going, what's this guy doing? You know, when you go in, is there ever concern?
It's a fine line, and that's again a very, very good question, because you've got it's a tough job. I mean, think about it. You've got 1,200, 1,500, 2,000 men living in close quarters that do not want to be there, don't like each other, angry. You know, there's a lot of, and then you've got correctional officers that they just want to go home at night, but they got a really tough job. You got a warden that's unbelievable pressure to protect the community, protect the inmates, protect the officers. I mean, it's just this incredible thing. But yeah, there's a lot of dynamics going on. You got bad guys who are trying to run things, don't want any disruption. You got guys that are being, you know, hurt, that want help. You've got really good officers. You got some officers with some issues. You got, you know, we're just people, right?
Right.
What I do is I go in, whether it be a warden, a superintendent, a politician, a pastor, whoever I'm talking to, is like, okay, the things you've got going on, whatever they are, if peace goes up and violence goes down, whatever it is you're trying to do works better. Am I right? And I don't care if it's a gangster. I'm like, can you run your business more smoothly if there's less violence? Now, I don't come out and say, hey, you can deal drugs a lot better if there's less violence. But the truth is, whatever your hustle is on the inside, and everybody's got a hustle.
Oh, yeah.
If you and I were in there, we'd figure out a hustle. But, I mean, you've got to get by, right? And I'm like, wherever there's violence, programs, freedom, treatment, education, faith-based programs, all gets taken away when violence goes up. When violence goes down, you get more freedom, movement, programs, sports, visitation, everything.
And even breathe.
Yeah. And even guys that are maybe doing things that I don't need to know about, they're happier. I mean, because everything's cool. So to the warden, to the correctional officer, to the bad guy, to the good inmate, peace works for everybody. I mean, that's why peace is, I mean, we're born for it. So it speaks to people. It really does. And there's this interesting honor among thieves where it's very hard to hurt somebody who's a peacemaker. You can, but there's almost an unwritten code, man. If you hurt one of the peacemakers, man, we're going to hurt you, because that guy's trying to be peaceful. Now, he might get himself in trouble in other ways. But people say, man, aren't you ever afraid? I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm safer in there than I am on the street.
I've
noticed
that.
Those guys would hurt somebody if they tried to hurt me because they love this program.
I've noticed that. And I think when I initially talked to Shar about this, I said, I'm a lot more comfortable in there talking to murderers than I am going to the Rotary Club. Because it seems like quickly there might be some guys that might be giving me the stink eye, so to speak. But the masks are off pretty fast.
They're very honest. I say this respectfully because I love church. It's great. I believe in church, love church. There's wonderful church going people. But in those prisons, I find men that their word means something. They're loyal. They're honorable. They understand respect. Those all are words that are pretty important in church. But if you give your word to somebody in church and then don't keep it, what are the consequences? I'm not going to call you this week.
Yeah.
You know, or if you say, yeah, I'll be there, meet you there, and you don't show up, it's like, man, I'm not going to be your friend anymore. In there, if you give your word and break it, or you say you're going to be somewhere and you're not there, or I got your back and I don't have it, you got real problems.
Yeah.
And so there's some deep convictions with these men, and the men that have faith are faith warriors because you got to be on the inside.
Yeah.
And so what I'm trying to do is help the public see that it's not everything you see on TV. There's some men in there that are a lot better men than me.
Yeah, I was wondering, that perception of watching Lock Up This and reality show that, where you don't really get it, you know, you basically, their texture is to find the craziest people possible because it's entertaining. You know, the guys that, I must admit, I've watched where they break into the cell and have to haul the extractions and all that stuff.
I know those guys too.
Yeah, but people don't. Yeah, but people don't see the other side of that. On another note, though, with your program and something that I've, in my limited experience, again, that I've run across, it's sometimes you'll get some of these guys that maybe were involved in the hierarchy of a gang or something like that, comes into your program, gets all fired up about it, and then all of a sudden, it's almost like, sometimes you probably got to tie a knot in some folks' tail, with the exception of probably being transferred out, shipped out, you know what I mean? That they would come in and start taking over the program, and that also, which would be an issue, I'm sure, with like the wardens and the SEALs, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Interestingly, well, first thing you said is, there's some in there that they don't ever need to be in society again.
Yeah.
Okay, we get that. There's some mental illness, and there's some just, you know, have done the things that will never allow them to be back out. And that's right. There's a place. But there's a lot of guys that do need to get back out and are going to get out. And it's going to be a matter of how are they going to be when they get out, when they come back to our communities. And so that's why I think it's so important. But I like to pick the toughest guy in the room, the one that looks like the most hopeless case. And I want to get him because, I mean, that's what does it for me, is the guy who is, because he's there for a reason. Either he got invited there by the warden, or he came voluntarily, or somebody dragged him along and said, you need to come do this. This is the hottest program. I mean, in the prison I was in this morning, last summer, they gave an invitation to, if you want to be a part of the next 40 Days of Peace, Power Peace Project, sign up. There's 1,200 men in that prison. Over 600 signed up.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what everybody says.
So there's a number of guys that are just tired of it.
And are ticked because now they can't, because they're expected to be in. And now the biggest problem is, how come I didn't get in? I mean, I'm getting pulled across the yard like, why didn't I get in?
That causes more negativity than,
So, but as far as when we had that problem, this goes to the second part of your question, is can these guys police themselves? Because we didn't have enough volunteers to handle the demand. We had hundreds of inmates that wanted to be a part of this thing. And so we tried something that was a risk, is we started using what I called peer facilitators. And I'd take a group of inmates that were program savvy. They had been through some programs.
Uh-huh.
And I'd give them some training about how to run a group. We didn't call them leaders. We didn't put them above anybody else. They were just peer facilitators. And I was amazed that you did have heavy guys. You had some high-ranking gang guys in there. You had rival gangs in the same circle. But they worked together, and we've never had any problem in the Power Peace Project.
Wow.
I'm telling you, in all the prisons, doesn't mean there's never been any problem in the units or out in the yard, but I'm saying in those groups, in those sacred areas, in the Power Peace launches and graduations and weekly groups, there has never been an issue because those guys are coming together to try to create peace. Now, there have been some really stupid things that have happened. We've kicked guys out because they were being disruptive outside of those rooms. But that's going to happen anywhere. But, man, I've seen guys that are the guys that you were talking about on those shows. I won't go into detail because it's kind of, you know, I don't want to say some certain. But when they're going into a cell to extract a guy, it's because he's doing some stuff that's really, really bad to the staff, whether he's throwing stuff on them or doing some different things. I know guys personally that was that guy that's no longer that guy.
Wow.
I mean, that they have been transformed by a number of programs, but definitely the Power Peace, you know, helps where they don't do that anymore. I mean, and people can change. And it has allowed me to see humanity differently. I really absolutely believe that anybody can change. And I don't say accept. There is no accept. I mean, I'm just going to live that way.
And it's a process. It's not a lot of people with, when they think of peace, they're, you know, walking along in a clover-filled field trying to grab butterflies. But but it's a process. It's a choice.
Yeah. Nonviolent is a weapon of the strong, not the weak. Nonviolence is, it takes a strong, and that appeals to these men. Because I go in and I challenge them as men. It's like, man, do you have the guts to be a peacemaker in this place? I dare you to. And then I'll take it away and say, I don't think you're ready. And I don't think you can do it. I mean, I think, you know, violent men are cowards.
They're man children.
No, that's not something you're supposed to say in a prison. But I'm like, look, if you're causing violence in this place and you're telling me you want to go home and to your family and you don't want to come back, but you're being a violent man in here, I just got to call you out and say that you're full of beep. Yeah. And I say it. And I'm like, prove it. If you're a real man, real men are peacemakers. It doesn't mean, it's not weakness for you to take a stand and not instigate violence. Now, if you have to protect yourself, do it, you know, but most of the time you can use your language like Dr. King did, you know, you can choose to suffer like Mr. Gandhi did. You can be a real man in prison like Mr. Mandela was. And something about this program just makes them feel stronger as men. And you've got guys that are violent men that now are turning to peacemakers and not losing their credibility or their respect, which is pretty amazing.
That is amazing. Now, you're also starting after, again, it's like you started backwards. You went into some of the toughest places you could possibly go in countries and prisons, but now you actually got some programs that are working in schools and trying to get this process going with kids before they get to that point.
Yeah, this was a wonderful unintended consequence. The more that I speak in a lot of different arenas. I do motivational speaking. I get asked to speak at churches, in schools, different things. When I started doing this program in prisons, it became the reason people wanted me to speak. You know? So I would go, he's the guy that works with rival gangs, whatever. And especially the kids, because they're playing Grand Theft Auto and listening to unhealthy hip-hop. Not all hip-hop's unhealthy, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But they're playing games. They say, this is a scary stat, by the time a kid goes to elementary school, he or she has witnessed 8,000 simulated murders.
I believe it.
That's TV, video games. By the time they're six. Now, think about that. Okay, so kids are growing up in this gangster culture. So when I came in and started talking about, you know, these men in these violent places becoming peacemakers, it got their attention. And so I started being asked, can you do it here? And it started in the inner city schools where there's youth gang violence and crime and, you know, that kind of thing, violence. But now it's out in the suburbs where it's heroin addiction, overdose, suicide, accidental deaths, drunk driving deaths. And it's either kids are killing each other on the inner cities or they're killing themselves. Suicide.
Yeah,
in
amazing
the suburbs.
Right now.
And so now we're developing a program that's working real powerfully. But what it does is it gives this symbiotic thing going on. Like today, I went into that prison and I said, let me tell you what you're doing for the kids. You got kids watching you. It's important. Don't just do it for yourself. But if you guys don't keep this thing going, it's going to crush these kids because they're over here at Muskegon Heights where I'm going to be tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And they're following your lead. And so, and then I'll go to the kids at Muskegon Heights and I'll say, hey, let me tell you what you guys are doing for those inmates. You've given them a big why. And so the two began to feel responsible to the other. And how beautiful is that?
That's amazing.
I mean, it's pretty cool. They play off each other, and we need a big why in our lives. You know, the bigger the why, you know, the less quit there is in me, you know, so.
So it's forward motion, and it's almost not cool to be peaceful nowadays.
Man.
It's just weird. It's weird, and I have to say, being the cynical old I guess I can say fart on my radio station, the cynical old fart that I am. I know it's been something that after Shar had brought me in your book and I'd been researching things a little bit. And one thing I would like to mention is you've talked about prisons. You've talked about how you're reaching out to kids, possibly kids with problems. But I can challenge any of my listeners out there right now to think about that, to maybe look into, you know, to get on your website and to pick up. I know the book that I have here, it's called Peace Behind the Wire. There's actually a chapter in here about Muskegon. Mm-hmm. And get in there and look at the seven steps and commit just by yourself, you know, grab yourself a little pad and paper and commit yourself to this. And that's how the world's going to change. If we started with individuals, and then we wouldn't have nearly as many people in prison, and our children could set examples for them. And even my cynical old self, if I can't learn it, if I can't change it, if I can't remember my idealism from years gone by, it's...
Yeah, it works. I mean, I have yet to figure out a situation where this simple process wouldn't work. There's three phases to it, but we'll take the one phase that you take any conflict. I don't care if it's Palestinian-Israeli conflict, if it's Crips and Bloods, if it's Russia and Ukraine, if it's, I'm picking just drastic examples, if it's whoever, all right? If you follow these steps, and now here's the catch, really do this. But here's what we teach the inmates. One, seek first to understand your opponent. Okay, that's so deep.
Yeah.
Seek first to understand. Before you know what you know, seek first to understand your opponent. Two, find common ground with your enemy. Find something that we agree on, right? Three, walk a mile in your adversary's shoes before you judge. You don't get to judge till you've walked a mile with them, right? Four, practice active listening. And pause before responding.
What a concept.
Five, practice deliberate communication and use your influence for peace. Six, when you're wrong, promptly admit it, quickly make amends. If you screw up, say you're sorry. And then treat your enemy with dignity and respect, even when you disagree. Now, you tell me what conflict can't be solved. Husband and wife, I don't care. If I seek first to understand you, if I find common ground with you, if I walk a mile with you, if I shut up and listen to you, if I speak deliberately and compassionately to you, if I say I'm sorry when I'm wrong, and if I treat you with respect, even if we walk away disagreeing, tell me we can't fix whatever world problem we have. It's like it's the Congress. Really, could we, Republicans and Democrats could do it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like I said, sitting in my ivory chair thinking, you know, the presidential candidate should be reading those seven things. Or
say it.
But again, it's got to start. I always get that convicted voice in the back of my head where it starts with me. And that's almost the definition of love when you take those seven steps and put it together. You're simply do what's in the best interest of someone else. Put someone else before yourself. And if that person reciprocates in the same way, how do you go wrong?
And it's like, the bully being cool. Somewhere along the way, we bought into the lie that the bully is the cool guy and girls, you know, chicks dig the bad guy. And we think about middle school and high school. Well, as adults, we look back. You think about the school bully. Where's he at today? You ever go to a 20-year reunion, 30-year reunion, and you see these guys that were the guys that, oh, man, they were the – if you were a bully in school, you're a loser today. The biggest bully in our school, he's in prison today.
Yeah.
God bless him. I hope he gets out. I wish I could go work with him. But I'm telling you, he ain't so cool anymore. Okay, so what we're trying to do is – we're trying to change what cool looks like in schools, all right? We want to, and we use social media campaigns. We do anti-bullying videos that the kids make. We do the 40 Days of Peace pledge. We do all this thing because what we're trying to do is put the bully out of business by making him or her uncool, okay? Make it no longer cool to Snapchat your buddy puking at a party because he's so drunk. It's not cool, man. You're making a fool of yourself. You know, the bully picking on a weak kid. We want the high school quarterback, popular kid, to stand up for the weak little nerdy kid. And now all of a sudden, that kid has the most popular kid in school walking down the hall saying, hey, what's up, buddy? I mean, we're trying to create that. So now girls like the peacemaker. Uh-huh. Why wouldn't they? Peacemaker.
Why not?
Peacemaker's sexy, man. You know what I'm saying?
No doubt. I have no idea.
I don't even know what that means.
I It's understandable. It definitely is. Sensitivity is in, doggone it. Michael Jackson tried. He tried, yeah. But it didn't quite come across with Michael. But
here's something. I'm sorry to interrupt. That's okay. I get fired up. This is a poignant moment. Okay, I say, I don't care if it's 8-year-old kids or if it's 80-year-old convicts. I say, what did Dr. King say? And they say, I have a dream.
Yeah.
They say it all together. Yep. And I'm like, 15-year-old kids. I'm like, how did you know that? Did they teach you in school? Everybody just knows what he said. I'm like, all right, well, what did Raymond Lee Washington say? And they're like, who's that? And I'll say, you know, Raymond Lee Washington. I know you know him. He started a movement about the same time Dr. King did. You know, his launched right at the end of when Dr. King, 68, when he was, so go ahead. Somebody quote me Raymond Lee. And they're like, we don't know Raymond Lee. I'm like, come on, man. Y'all know Raymond Lee. Yeah, I play it up. And then I tell them the story of who Raymond Lee Washington is. He started the Crips.
Wow. It's
the biggest gang in America.
Yeah.
Why is he not a rock star legend? They don't even know his name. And yet they're in this gangster culture. And the reason why is Dr. King's name lives forever because he was a peacemaker. Raymond Lee Washington, his name is not remembered anymore because of the movement that he started. And so, I don't know. Peacemaker's much cooler than the bully.
Well, if people want to get involved in this, I can't imagine. Do you have like people that go out? I can't imagine you do this all yourself. Do you actually have people in the he's looking over at Char and she's laughing. I mean, what am I saying here?
Well,
he's it. You're it, huh?
I mean, I always use the word we because I like we, and sometimes they say, who's we? And I say, it's me and a frog in my pocket, you know. But no, we're raising up college kids to be role models and mentors and facilitators in our high school and middle school programs.
Okay,
that is something that I can replicate. This is hard to replicate in prisons.
I'm sure.
And so to be able to go in, and I don't know, I think some of it is a gift, some of it's an art, some of it's a science, some of it's a skill, but doing it over and over in a bunch of places and learning and studying and trying, I've kind of figured out how to get these guys.
Uh-huh.
And I've been... Along the way, I've had some guys that have come on for a season that I've trained that now are out doing other things. Some you've got to really have a certain gifted skill set to do this. And so replicating it in the prison, besides me going and launching it, I go and launch, and then the men run it with the supervision of the staff and CHAP, and you know, and then I go back and celebrate it. So that works real well. And I give them videos, and they've got journals and small group, you know, leadership guides and stuff. So the program is dynamite without me having to be there. But as far as how to launch it, I haven't been able to fully train anybody to do that just yet.
So you're a busy, busy man.
Want me to tell you the latest?
Where have you been the last 10 days?
Well, we talked about it. Tijuana.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. It's funny. Tijuana called.
Wow, yeah. I had the opportunity to go into a prison in Tijuana.
Which I'm very impressed. Yeah. I'm very impressed. It got my attention. But yeah, I just synchronicity. And I met a guy who's just wild man, maverick down there on San Diego, Tijuana border down there. And he's in there working with kids in one of the toughest parts of Tijuana, cartel-controlled, drug-infested, very poor area. You know, I mean, it's very, very corrupt and very dangerous.
Yeah.
But he has started working with kids using soccer. And again, children bind us together, you know.
No doubt.
So through him, he and I have gone in, and we've gotten the blessing and the protection of the powers that be. And that does involve cartels and drug dealers and kingpins and rich landowners.
It does.
And all of them have, it's this amazing little truce that has come over this area to protect these kids. But I've been invited into two prisons in the area to do the Power Peace project, the 40-day programs, because rival cartels are fighting for control of these prisons. And so, you know, I go where I'm invited. So we're going to launch it Cinco de Mayo. But I don't even speak Spanish. So
That's fine.
You know, but we're going to use the same model. I'm going to take the interpreter in there with me, and we're going to get with the leaders and we're going to sit down, and I'm going to, they're going to see. I mean, I met with, you know, the drug kingpin in the area. I had a meeting, you know, with, that was a very important meeting 10 days ago, you know, with the guy who runs the drugs in that area. And I can't say his boss's name because it's a bad word, his nickname, but it's pretty funny. But I met with these guys, and I used all the things that I've learned in prison to meet with this guy in Tijuana to get his blessing and protection. And I looked him in the eye. I called him sir. I shook his hand firmly. I smiled. I was kind to him. I showed ultimate respect. And then through my interpreter, who was afraid to look at the man in the eye because it was a sign of disrespect, I looked at my interpreter and I said, tell him that I came all the way from Atlanta just to see him today. And he told him, and you should have seen the demeanor of this quote-unquote bad guy change. He looked at me. He finally looked me in the eye. He stepped forward. He reached out his hand, and he gave me a real handshake, and he thanked me because that was respect. I was paying respect to him without judgment. It's none of my business what he does. I want protection for those kids.
Yeah.
So it's a fascinating world that I just can't wait for the next thing. You know, it keeps getting better. But this story is going to be, this is what the world needs right now. They're talking about the wall. They're talking about immigration. They're talking about cartels and heroin coming in and all the violence at the border. It's the topic, you know, one of the hot topics of this election campaign. And now all of a sudden there's going to be this story coming out of Tijuana, which is one of the hot spots where this bright light is shining and it's to protect kids, and cartel members are somehow becoming peacemakers. I mean, that's just stinking hot.
That's amazing.
I mean, that's Oprah. Say Oprah for me.
Oprah.
Okay, Oprah, call Bill.
Well, that's incredible. We're just we're about out of time. If people want to get involved, is there a way, whether it's financial consideration or wherever, that they might be able to go online? Or
yeah, they can go to powerofpeaceproject.com. Or they can just Google Power Peace Project. They can Google my name, Kit Cummings, Peace Behind the Wire. But yeah, we need all the help we can get financially, volunteers. I mean, people that just want to connect me. I go where I'm invited. So please check out the website and get involved somehow.
And go to YouTube too, I'd say.
YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. Easy to find. Yeah.
You bet. Well, thank you so much for coming to Muskegon and again, making our prisons a safer place, which obviously has happened. And just keep on keeping on, man. It's been wonderful to have you on today.
And tomorrow night, the 31st, at Muskegon Heights High School at 7 o'clock, we're having a Unity in the Community event. And it's for the public, and it's about the kids, but it's at Muskegon Heights High School, 7 p.m. tomorrow night, the 31st. Come and join us.
Okay, we'll make sure we tell people about that till tomorrow. That's awesome. Thank you very much, Kit. It's been incredible to have you here.
Thank you, sir.